The Zone Coverage Podcast Network.
You can put it on the board!
Woo!
All right, we're back here for another episode of Midwest Swing. You can find us on Twitter at Midwest Swing Pod. We're part of the Zone Coverage Podcast Network. I almost said Cold Omaha.
I know.
The Zone Coverage Podcast Network, which you can find on Twitter at Zone Coverage MN. I am your host, Brandon Warren. You can find me on Twitter at Brandon _ Warren. It is Read It All Day 2017. You can find that hashtag RIA Day 2K17. I am trying to get people's stuff read on Twitter today. So please check that out as well if you're listening to this on Tuesday, August 1st. You heard that other voice here that is joining me. It is Tom Schreier at TSchreier3 on Twitter, Cold Omaha Zone Coverage co-founder and the producer of today's show. Tom, how's it going?
Doing well.
Good. No delay today. Just to, I think I'm still trying to get caught up on everything that went on yesterday. Trade deadline for the big leagues, and so a lot going on. We are bringing on our guest today. You may have seen him on Twitter or on MLB Daily Dish. It is Chris Cotillo. Chris, what's going on?
Finally, can relax a little bit after some craziness for a couple weeks, but thanks for having me.
Yeah, how many hours of sleep have you been averaging the last week or so for sleep?
The last few nights, it's like you know, 4 or 5 hours. It's because stuff has been happening really late and then early too, so it's tough, but it's a fun time, obviously.
And you can find him on Twitter at Chris, CotilloCotillo. Again, his stuff is on MLB Daily Dish, part of the SB Nation family of blogs. Let's just dive right in. There was a handful of deals that actually didn't come to fruition. You didn't see Brad Hand go anywhere, not Lance Lynn. None of the relievers for the Orioles went anywhere. Locally here, the Twins held on to Brian Dozier and Irvin Santana, despite moving Jaime Garcia and Brandon Kinstler. Well, let's ask you this first. As far as the deals that didn't happen, which one was maybe the most shocking to you, either in terms of a player that was primed to be moved, or maybe where you heard a lot of, or you saw a lot of smoke, but there didn't end up being any fire?
Yeah, for me it was interesting because like an hour before the deadline, we still had Darvish, Gray, Handon, Britton on the board, and I think, you know, those four guys are really the four stories heading into the day. And then we saw, you know, as everybody knows, Gray to the Yankees, Darvish to the Dodgers there at the end. But I think, you know, the big non-move for me has to be Zach Britton not going anywhere. I think, you know, the Orioles are a fascinating organization where, you know, a lot of times if you ask me previously, who do you think, you know, is the most kind of screwed team for the future, just in terms of everything, if you look at their organization, probably would have been the Diamondbacks for a while, just because their front office was kind of incompetent before they changed things. And, you know, obviously a change has jump-started them. The Marlins always are in the running. The Angels are close now because they have very little in ways of the farm system. But the Orioles, if you look at it now, are really in a tough position where they're known as not the best drafting team. You can always talk about this at length, but they're known as not the best drafting team. They completely ignore the international market, despite that being where teams are finding almost, you know, more talent than they are in the draft now. We're seeing all the top prospects in baseball now and in the international market. The Orioles do not participate at all. They trade all their slots away. And so the way to get young players is to get, you know, guys back in trade. So, yeah, this is something, you know, that's really, really shocking to me that they really didn't go and try to trade Britton. I think, you know, Peter Angelos does things his own way there at the top, really kind of hamstrings his front office and makes it really difficult to get things done. But for them to go out and make their two moves to get Jeremy Hellickson, giving up, you know, a prospect for him and giving up a prospect for Tim Beckham, of all people, which is a weird fit. It really just a crazy deadline to me. If they had moved Britton or Brock or one of those guys, I think it would have been a great way to just start rebuilding that system. And now if they do it in the offseason, they reduce their value because it's obviously one less pennant race you can pitch those guys in. But for me, really a surprising thing that Britton didn't get moved.
On a scale of 1 to 100, with 100 being the highest, how surprised were you to see that Darvish got moved basically in an 11th-hour deal?
Oh, man. I really wasn't that surprised, actually. I think it's one of those things where the Dodgers seemed to be the only fit there. You know, heading in, it was great to the Yankees, Darvish to the Dodgers. Anything else that happened would be a surprise. So I think as the day progressed and the teams weren't matching up, I looked at, you know, the likelihood of him staying was increasing, but I also kind of knew that the Rangers weren't going to do that. They really had given up on this year and wanted to make that move and were probably going to take whatever offer they got in the 11th hour. So it seems like for a variety of reasons, him being a rental and some other things, that he ended up, you know, having a very limited market, one that was way more limited than we thought it would be. So with the Yankees focused on Gray, the Red Sox and the Astros not really being good fits. So, you know, it wasn't that surprising, but the fact that it, you know, broke at about 410 maybe was a little bit of a surprise.
And the Dodgers added Tony Cingrani and Tony Watson as well to beef up that bullpen. Do you get the sense that anybody in the National League can beat them, or is it kind of them steamrolling their way to the World Series? I mean, I know you can't crown anybody. Anything can happen in a short series. But if you've got Kershaw, Darvish, and Wood, you obviously have to like your chances with Jansen and company closing it out. Do you feel like any National League team can keep up with them?
You know, I think the three favorites that we've been seeing for a while are all really good. You know, the Dodgers are the favorite. That's clear based on the way they've played. But at the same time, once you get into the postseason, we've seen some of the best pitchers in the regular season, whether it be Kershaw or Price, struggle. So, you know, in a short five-game series, that big three is really stout. But if you're going up against, you know, Washington eventually, you're going to be having, you know, Strasburg, Scherzer, and Gio Gonzalez, who's pitching really well. And then all of a sudden, the Nationals now have some bullpen additions. No one like the big name like Kenley Jansen, but, you know, as you know, Kinsler's pretty good.
And, yeah, yes.
And getting Doolittle and Mets and those guys, they really have a very good lineup. That's, you know, people have focused on that bullpen, but to have basically, you know, your bullpen working against you, and every game the Nationals played before these trades, they were not only playing the team they were playing, they were, you know, another opponent was their bullpen trying to lose games. And for them, their offense and their rotation to step up as much as it has to win as many games as they did with a bullpen that was completely in shambles. I spent a month in D.C. and spent a lot of times at games. I probably went to 10 games and I saw maybe 6 games blown by the bullpen. It was just, you know, these guys they were trotting out there could not get the job done. An obvious weakness they filled, and I think they're a good threat now, too.
Does it feel like San Francisco last year a little bit as far as the bullpen?
Yeah, but San Francisco didn't do much to address it.
No, and that's the thing. Yeah, they did in the offseason, and now we found that Mark Melancon, who's battled injuries, and that team is just terrible. Sometimes you have to deal with things in the moment because you don't know what the future holds.
Yeah, and we saw, you know, with San Francisco, I think it was a little bit of, you know, that respect factor for your older guys, giving them, continuing to give them a chance after all they'd done for their organization, whether that was Romo or Casilla or Javier Lopez. And you can't do that. You have to, you know, when you're in the middle of a race, you have to really be able to make moves. We saw them really turn that around. Melancon was the big move. Hasn't worked out as they imagined, but Hunter Strickland and some of these other guys are getting up now. So I think, you know, with Washington, they were able to actually make those moves at a pretty low cost overall.
Yeah.
You know, I think that the return for Kinsler was, it seemed like just he had more of a limited market than you would have thought because he kind of hit the market late. And the one prospect was a little surprising for an all-star closer, but they didn't even have to give up any of their top four guys in that Doolittle and Madsen deal. Those guys are both controllable, and I was really impressed with Washington. You know, they're always savvy traders, but in general had one hole and went out and filled it 3 times, which is pretty impressive.
Yeah, and I think we can't sleep on the Cubs either just with how good they were last year. So I think it's pretty clear it's the Dodgers 1, Washington 2, and then everyone else after that. But if the Dodgers get out of the National League side and were to face the Astros in the World Series, again, I don't know how often team 1 on each side faces off, but you'd have to be pretty enthused about that World Series as far as ratings and excitement in October, wouldn't you?
Yeah, definitely. I think you would be. You know, anything with the Dodgers is going to be great ratings-wise. Yeah, I think the last year was a dream matchup with the Cubs and Indians both trying to break their curse. But think about the opportunities. You know, big markets, Red Sox, Dodgers, Yankees, Dodgers, and then Houston and the Dodgers would be a really interesting one as well. I think on the American League side, the Yankees, you know, did the most to improve, and a lot of people really like them. But they've been a little bit up and down. The Red Sox, you know, living here, I've seen all the off-the-field distractions that are going on, and that's a really big part of this team. They're a pretty unlikable group, and I think that has something to do with it. And just getting guys healthy, and I think they're still, you know, we haven't seen the max potential from the Red Sox. People are saying they didn't do enough at the deadline, whatever, but you haven't seen the max potential.
Yep.
They're still within a half game, and almost everybody's underperformed, except for guys like Sale and Kimbrel. So it's that's a little scary to me, too.
So how surprised were you, though, of what it took the Dodgers to get Darvish? I mean, Willie Calhoun is obviously the prize here, but he's a man without a position. I mean, he can play some second base, but he's probably a DH moving to the American League. Superfluous, probably, on the Dodgers based on the fact that they, you know, have some depth there. Brandon Davis, an infielder, and then A.J. Alexi, a righty, that's a lottery ticket. That seems a little light, but at the same time, too, again, it's realizing that it is a rental. I just feel like with all the teams that are in need of pitching, I'm a little surprised they didn't extract even just a fourth piece or maybe a little more intriguing second or third piece.
Yeah, with two lottery tickets and then Calhoun. You know, Calhoun is a really unique prospect. He's a shorter guy and not the build of a baseball player you'd expect, no position, but mm-hmm. that power will play. You know, and I think that's obviously more of a fit in the AL. So that's the big prospect that they got. You know, it's never was going to be they were going to deal Buehler or Verdugo. That was just never going to be the case. And all of a sudden, you're at a point where you can get Calhoun and a couple lottery tickets, and that might be good enough for a 2 month rental. But it's it did seem maybe a little light. I think we just kind of skew it because we compare those types of things, even though they're different situations, to the returns for like Gray and Quintana and seeing what came back. And the control part in baseball is way bigger than I think we even give it credit for, where you have three pennant races basically with Sonny Gray. You have one with Darvish. That means you really should get three times the value, in my mm-hmm. mind. And that's something that, some people just compare. It's really an apples to oranges thing, and it skews it a little bit.
Well, let's pivot to that Yankees deal for Sonny Gray, because that is the second really big starter that moved on July 31st. And not an insignificant price, but at the same time, too, Mateo's been a little down this year. Got bumped to Double A, where he's actually hit pretty well. Caprielian is on the shelf, and so is Fowler after that nasty collision in right field. I think it works for the Yankees in that they didn't have to trade any of their core four or top five prospects, at least in the terms of the analysis or the analysts that I've read, that they didn't have to go with Gleyber Torres or trade Frazier or anything like that. Did you think they were going to be able to pull Sonny Gray without really going from one of those top guys, or do you think that it was kind of destined to happen either way, and they just waited out the desperation of the A's to get this churn going as they again turn this roster over?
I don't think the A's were desperate by the end of it. I think it was basically going to be three of the four of those three guys that moved, and then Floreal, the center field prospect. When you look at what the Yankees have, it's really a lot of outfielders, and we've seen them be able to move Fowler and move Rutherford right now in this deadline for pieces because they have so much depth. If you look at what they have, obviously Judge, they have, unfortunately for them, Ellsbury around, they have Gardner, and then Clint Frazier is going to be under control for a while, Floreal, these other guys, and they really probably want a spot for a big-time outfielder in a year and a half in free agency, whether that be Bryce Harper or someone else. So it's kind of the same thing. We're seeing the Cardinals have so many guys that they're probably going to unload one of those guys, whether it be Piscotty or Tommy Pham or someone like that, because there are only so many spots for those types of players. And the Yankees saw that and decided that they could use that surplus. They obviously would have liked to keep those guys and keep the depth, but they realized that, the time is now. And for them, the top three guys they got in trades all are controllable. That's Gray, Robertson, and Canely. Frazier and Jaime Garcia are nice pieces for the stretch run, but rentals, and you didn't have to give up a ton for Garcia. And the real value in the Frazier deal is for the other guys who are under control. So I think the Yankees had an impressive deadline. They still have that stock of prospects, whether it be Torres or Frazier or Floreal or some of these other guys at the top. The return for Oakland, to me, it's three big names. Fowler was really a highly touted guy. Mm-hmm. And then Mateo has had some issues over the last couple of years, but is a kind of a lottery ticket, high potential guy. And Caprielian just hasn't been healthy, hasn't really done that much in the pros yet. But a first-round pick a couple of years ago out of UCLA, pitching in a big-time program with a pedigree of really being able to turn out pro arms, and Cole and Bauer and all these guys. So I think it's a pretty good return. It's probably not going to, you're not going to get anything out of it this year, but it's all about patience. And, I think it's something that fans have to realize. It's not going to happen now, but you have to be just patient and wait for these guys to, A, get healthy, and then, B, develop. And then it's three guys that have potential to be stars, and you don't get that in every trade.
So I saw Mark Feinstein, MLB.com reporter, say that there were no impact bats traded at the deadline. That's not entirely accurate because J.D. Martinez was traded on July 18th. Eduardo Nunez, probably the higher impact bat, the later you get. Lucas Duda can't stay healthy. You know, I get that there was not really an impact bat moved, but you know, what's your level of surprise that these trades that came in late were all pitcher heavy?
I think there's a few reasons for that. I think obviously there's just this kind of thing where, you know, the contenders that are buyers were all pretty much set. At every position, they had a couple positions, the Red Sox at third base, the Yankees in the corner infield, where they filled with Nunez and Frazier. But outside of that, you know, a guy like Zach Cozart is a perfect trade candidate, and he can't get moved because no one has a fit for him. Yonder Alonso on an all-star year, he's obviously been down lately, but if they looked at him earlier in the month, it probably would have been able to move him. I think, you know, the focus is on pitching right now. The focus was all month. And if you just look at yesterday, deadline day, the three position players moved. Nori Aoki being one, Tim Beckham, and Adam Rosales, which, you know, that's, I think the combined war of those guys is about mine for the year. So it's just, you know, a crazy, crazy thing to me. Because a year ago, you saw Beltran and Lucroy and Bruce and all those types of guys move. But the focus is just getting depth in the pitching staff, as much pitching as you possibly can get, basically across the board. And outside of that, J.D. Martinez move. And that's one other piece of this is that, you know, that could have even deflated the market more. That's the first move in the position player market. Ended up being the most significant one when Detroit gets nothing back, basically.
Right.
The teams are like, well, what's the point? You know, even what's the point of even shopping these guys? We saw really no controllable position players move, no controllable position players shopped. No, Machado's and Donaldson's that could have been out there weren't. So that's a big storyline for this deadline.
Joe Sheehan tweeted just about an hour or so ago that there, by his count, were 13 buyers. There are 10 playoff teams, including wild cards. Do you think that his assertion is that teams might be seeing the wild card as a mirage? Would you tend to agree with that?
Yeah, I think there's a lot of teams that, you know, decide to go for it and can get snake bitten by that. The Athletics a few years ago is the biggest example of that. And, you know, it's been talked about for a long time about Addison Russell and giving him up for a wild card berth and losing that game. I think that's, you know, there's obviously, it doesn't exactly boil down to that, but Samardzija, Hamill, and Lester, you give up Cespedes and Addison Russell in that trade season and losing the wild card game. That's a risk that teams are facing right now. The Rays didn't give up as much as that to make their moves, and I think, you know, some of these other buyers, but again, the Orioles don't make any sense getting Hellickson and Beckham. We saw the Twins pivot after buying a little bit. The Angels didn't make any buys, and I think the really impressive thing in terms of being controlled for me was the Brewers. We heard the Brewers linked to basically every big name out there, whether it be Gray or even Darvish a little bit toward the end, but I think they realized that the you know, the deck's not stacked in their favor for the rest of this year. They wanted to keep the prospects they got a year ago. I wrote about this and said, just don't make these big moves. Make, you know, smaller type deals. And they went out and got Swarzak and Jeffress, a reunion with Jeffress to really shore that up. So I think, you know, I was pretty impressed with overall what the Brewers did, just showing that amount of restraint and being able to keep the farm system that they've just developed here in the last year.
All right, well, the last thing I got for you before we let you go, have you ever watched professional wrestling or anything like that?
I have not, no.
Okay, well, I'll guide you along here. If obviously people know you you and Jeff Passan of Yahoo Sports mess with each other quite frequently. So I'm giving you a chance. If you want to cut a promo to throw down with him, this is your chance to tell him what you think you're made of and what you want to do.
That wouldn't be even worth my time. You know? I think we've established on Twitter that's the battleground. And if he wants to, you know, we can paint this as him do it. We can paint it in a lot of ways. He's a rookie hazing in the industry, bullying someone younger. That's possible, which is.
And shorter,
you know,
right? Shorter, right?
Right. Well, not that much. We're all based. I mean, every baseball writer is like in the 5'5", 5'6" range. That's why we write and don't play. So, no, but Jeff, it's just, he's got the same brand of humor as me. And, I think that manifests itself in a way where people think that it's completely a really hostile situation on Twitter. Maybe it is. It really isn't, but it's absolutely hilarious to me. I'm the kind of person who, you know, people are like, you know, God, you're so salty about Passan and what he's saying to you, and I never actually do. I find the stuff like yesterday his big thing was, it's like following a Chris Cotillo account that doesn't break news, and I thought that was one of the funniest things I've ever read, because he's you know, for the most part, and at this deadline, right, he breaks the Sonny Gray return, he breaks the Yu Darvish return, I'm getting Emilio Bonifacio to the D-backs, and that should be expected. You know, he's with Yahoo and is doing, you know, so he does such great work, just like the other guys do, Rosenthal and Heyman, and they have a lot more experience, and I'm sure the GMs who are making these trades are much more apt to respond to their texts than mine. So I'm happy with the scoops I do get, and just hoping to someday actually be at that level as Jeff if we're going to be serious for a second.
Well, he's Pedro Martinez, and he's treating you like Kareem Garcia. So we appreciate we appreciate your time a lot. You got to get out of here, but thanks for joining us on Midwest Swing, and we'll talk to you again real soon.
As long as he doesn't treat me like Don Zimmer, we're good.
Yeah, I think we're okay. That was Chris Cotillo, MLB Daily Dish. You can find him on Twitter at Chris, Cotillo. Tom, let's talk a little bit about Brandon Kinsler and the trade that sent him to Washington. First of all, what was your level of surprise that he got shipped off? Because I think, you know, we mentioned on the staff podcast today, the highly rated staff podcast hosted by the wonderful Sam Ekstrom today, that, you know, he turns 33 today, not Sam Ekstrom, but Brandon Kinsler. And so with free agency looming at the end of the season, it made sense to make a move. Got a semi-interesting pitching prospect, left-handed, 20 years old. Doesn't particularly throw hard, but has got potential to add velocity. I think it's a slam dunk move, and I see on Twitter that I might be in the minority if you consider all the fan perspective as well.
Right, right. I think there's a handful of things. First of all, I'm not surprised they moved Kinsler. I think that there was a dose of reality, not necessarily getting beat by the Dodgers. The Dodgers, if I'm making a World Series prediction right now, and it's not any different than it was going to the All-Star break, I think it's going to be Dodgers over Boston, unless really New York now looks really, really good. Maybe New York overtakes them.
I think it's going to be Houston, but...
Yeah, and I'm just curious how Houston plays in the playoffs. Obviously, we're kind of going down...
Oh, they're young, too. Right? So yeah. It is October. It's going to be a big spotlight for them.
But anyways, I was more surprised... Maybe that they didn't go more in. I thought it was interesting that Brian Dozier, maybe this is an angle that I should take once we get back in the locker room when the Twins are back in town. It's funny, and it's actually a positive thing probably for Twins fans getting a glimpse of the Twins culture, that Brian Dozier, instead of saying, hey, I want to trade, I'm 30 years old, you know, I'd like to go to a contender, he's actually saying the Twins should bring in more guys, right? He was super upset that Jaime Garcia makes one start, goes, what, 6 2/3 innings, gets the lone win really in that kind of losing streak the Twins have had. And then I kind of joke about him getting laundered, but, you know, like gets flipped for prospects. And actually, widely, just listen to national broadcasts, people are kind of praising the Twins for that move. But I'm a little surprised that maybe Dozier doesn't get floated a little bit more, Irvin Santana doesn't get floated a little bit more. I heard some people speculating, do they try to move Bartolo Colon for anything? Right,
I think they will in August. I really do think they will.
Can you explain, by the way, just for people, how because the trade deadline isn't over. There's a waiver period. Here.
So basically, anybody who's traded before August 31st then is eligible to play in the postseason. So we've seen waiver deals with the Twins a lot. I believe Ruben Sierra was one. I know for a fact Phil Nevin 1 year, Don Baylor the '87 team. Was traded to the Twins that year. Actually didn't do anything for them in the regular season, really. So even though he's believed to be one of these great contributors to the 87 team, really didn't do anything until the postseason. But from August 1st until the 31st, there is trade waivers. And so you basically place pretty much all your guys on trade waivers. The Twins have stopped doing it with Joe Mauer, first of all, because they're never going to trade him, and second of all, because fans didn't understand trade waivers. So you get trade waivers, and it's basically you run a guy through, teams can claim them, and in theory, if the team that claims them, let's just use a hypothetical player, Brian Dozier.
Sure.
If the Twins put Brian Dozier through trade waivers,
and
let's say the Chicago White Sox claim him, the Twins can work out a trade with the White Sox. They can say, all right, he's yours, and just give him to them. They assume the contract, or the Twins can pull Brian Dozier back, and they can say, all right, fine. What that means then is then the next time the Twins put Brian Dozier on trade waivers in August, they cannot pull him back. So you can pull a player back once. The second time, they just get the player. There is a lot of risk here, and so this is why a lot of times there's some strategy. The White Sox actually had a claim go through, and it was Alex Rios. I think you probably remember him as the right-handed hitting outfielder. I think he was on the Royals when J.R. Graham, your guy,
I know,
hit him and broke his wrist. And
that's
actually,
right. That's
I think
right.
In theory ended his productive MLB career. When the Blue Jays put him on waivers, he had something like, I think he was on a five-year, like $65 million deal and had 4 years left. The White Sox made a claim and the Blue Jays said, ha, take him. And I think that also happened with like Randy Myers, the left-handed closer, like 20-some years ago.
Huh.
So in theory, though, think about this. Like if you're the Twins and you see the Indians need a stud closer and Zach Britton gets put on waivers, the Twins are going to have a higher waiver priority than the Indians. So the Twins could, in theory, block that. But the risk is that you might end up having to take on the player. So there's a lot of layers.
It's complicated. Yeah.
So it's complicated. But then if a player clears, they are eligible to be traded anywhere for the rest of the month, or rest of the year, frankly, but no trades really happen after September, usually, unless it's a real panic. But you have to be on a roster by September 1st to be eligible to play in the postseason.
Yeah.
Anyway.
So my broader point here is that, you know, I think the Twins didn't go all in kind of with the fire sale or whatever. And it makes some sense. As much as it's a new regime, there should be some honeymoon. Fans are going to be up. I'm going to have a piece up on this. It's kind of in the editorial process right now. But
kind of.
Fans are going to be upset because it's... they still inherit the five losing seasons, the 6 years, the new stadium, all that. I think the thing with Dozier is if Polanco was really raking and you were pretty confident that Escobar could just hold down shortstop for the rest of the year.
Or Adrianza, who's been playing well.
Yeah. If one of those guys could hold it down, I think it's easier to move on from Dozier. The hard thing is it's the same thing kind of with Trevor Plouffe, although Dozier is a better player. He's the voice of the locker room. He brings some leadership qualities. He's a success story coming out of there.
Huge success story.
Yeah, I mean, eighth round pick or whatever.
Honestly, making the big leagues would have been a success story. He's a huge success story.
Yeah, as a coming out of his senior year at
Senior
at
side
at
USM. Yeah,
so I think I get why you hold on to Dozier. Santana even makes more sense because I think they'll go into the offseason literally looking for Urban Santana if they let him go, right? Kind of a relatively affordable veteran kind of anchor. It's hard to call him an ace, but an anchor in the rotation. So I understand those moves. They didn't kind of go all in. They're kind of going with the guys they got. That was my last column, was just, it looks like the Twins are going to play it out with kind of who they got. And I don't know if this team, as Dozier suggested when they traded Jaime Garcia,
mm-hmm.
is a winner, this is the time to prove it and maybe prove the management wrong. I think Felvey and Levine are being reasonable and saying, look, Kansas City's in a weird place. They're probably going to go all in this year, but they could end up taking a big step back next year. You probably know exactly who it is.
Kansas City?
Yeah.
They have tons of free agents.
Yeah.
Moustakas, Hosmer, Kane.
I mean, they're key.
Duffy
guys.
Was going to be, they signed him. Escobar.
Yeah.
There's probably others I'm missing.
So they'll probably hold on to one of those guys that is.
Maybe not even at all.
So I think this is their one last hurrah. And
it absolutely is.
And Cleveland's kind of looking like Cleveland again. Joe Smith was their only move, right?
Yeah, sidearming righty that would have made sense for the Twins if the Twins were buying.
Yeah, but Cleveland, with the group they've got, has underachieved. So
they didn't need to add that much. I should add, players who are not on the 40-man roster don't have to be run through this waiver. So let's just say hypothetically the Twins trade Bartolo Colon to Cleveland. Cleveland doesn't need Bartolo Colon.
Yeah.
You understand. The Twins could get an A-ball shortstop if that's what they wanted to do as far as get a return, because guys in the low-level guys are not on the 40-man roster for the most part, and so it would make sense. So hopefully that cleared up most of waivers, and hopefully it was entirely factually correct. That's me recalling off the top of my head. But yeah, then guys like Matt Belisle are in the mix. In fact, I think Matt Belisle has a good chance, a really good chance to be moved in August, because that ERA is starting to creep down. It's under 5, which, you know, you usually wouldn't think is that great. But since San Francisco, he got bombed there like June 14th, I want to say. Since then, he's given up like one earned run or something like that. And so somebody might want him for their sixth inning.
Yeah. Mike Berardino actually did a really good piece on him. about how he's changing it around.
Well, so it was funny. Actually, I talked to him the day before Mike did, and he sits next to Brian Dozier in the clubhouse, and neither of those guys are stat guys. They're very much Wild West baseball guys. So I just talked to Matt. I'm just like, hey, you know, you're pitching better. Is anything really going on? He's like, nah, man, you know, I know what the numbers say. I don't really care about numbers. I just kind of care about executing what I got to execute. Not much has changed. That's just baseball. And it's funny. I want to ask Falvey and Levine if it was deliberate that they brought in a guy like that and a guy like Breslow, who is the exact opposite
for the
culture of the clubhouse. I was thinking it might be a feature on that, but now that Breslow's been released, it might not land. But he could definitely move in August. And again, the Twins need to find room for the John Curtises, the Mason Malatakis, the Luke Bards. I almost said Daniel Bard. That's his older brother. They have still some interesting arms down in the minor leagues.
Well, even
Drew Rusinski.
Jake Reed still in the
Jake Reed's in the mix too. So they could stock this bullpen. You know, when everyone says bring Kinsler back, they might just not really be motivated to bring in that many vets next year.
You know, I think the hard thing is, again, I go back to losing to the Dodgers is reasonable, although they seem to kind of like fight with, like they were in the mix in all those games, if I remember right.
Yeah, no, and basically it comes down to this.
The A's walk-offs killed them.
Yeah, it's not fair to judge the Twins on a three-day stretch in Los Angeles against not only probably the best team in baseball, but certainly the hottest team in baseball. That's not fair. But the reality of the situation is that they were probably about, what, 15% postseason rate, likelihood on Prospectus and Fangraphs, and they're probably down to, I'm guessing 7 or 8% now. Let's just pull this up. Cool standings on playoff odds on Fangraphs.
Okay.
Go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, while you're looking that up, the one reason I think Twins fans are going to be super upset about the Kinsler move is that Taylor Rogers, who has been really solid in the bullpen, I would say Hildenberger recently, and then Duffy just as kind of like an innings eater, are kind of your three guys. I mean, Bo Scheers is probably better
Belisle
than expected.
He's in that mix.
But it's just like you can tell in high leverage situations, he's not using Buddy. He's not using, you know, he uses Duffy a little bit.
But the problem is Rogers has shown jinx in his armor lately.
That's my point, is I think that's why the Kinsler trade is looking really tough.
It's tough for fans to swallow because they think you want to win every game no matter what, when it might be strategically better to part it out for the future.
And it's not necessarily good to the draft pick. I think it's more, you look at what they have now. If you look at their moves as a whole, they've added 4 pitching prospects.
Oh yeah, I don't mean the draft pick. I just mean in the sense that it makes sense to see what you have in kids with guys who are not going to be around when you are good again. Which is in my theory is actually next year. I think that the winning window opens next year.
Yeah,
and this was a pleasant surprise this year that you can't bank on.
The three things I have questions about are: how do you fill out the pitching staff? So does like Kyle Gibson have a sweet second half and you give him another chance? Or
Dylan Gee is coming up. That news is actually broken this afternoon.
Okay.
Or Gee, whatever. He's probably going to be the fifth starter, I would guess.
And he was on the board of being released, right? Because he had like a certain clause in his contract.
He could have opted out, I believe, on July 15th.
Yeah.
Right around the All-Star break. And he stuck around because I think the Twins basically knew they were going to find room for him.
So that's the point. Like, how do they fill out the rotation? Who plays shortstop? Who hits who protects Snow in the lineup? I think if you answer those questions, then you can get into the peripheries of, do you go long-term with Rosario? Do you look at another outfielder?
Right.
And then just kind of like, who's the ace of the staff and stuff. So, but those immediate concerns would have to be addressed if they're going to contend next year.
Yeah, I think I agree with that.
You have some probabilities.
5.6% for playoff odds on Fangraphs. Here's what I said. I talked to Keith Brake on the breakdown up in Bison 1616 in Fargo.
I saw that tweet.
Yeah, and somebody asked me what it's like to talk baseball with a 12-year-old. I actually have that guy muted on Twitter. But sometimes I like to see what the muted haters are saying to me as well. What I said to him was, I don't think the Twins got appreciably worse with this trade deadline. Again, Jaime Garcia, he's a nice pitcher and whatever. But for 2 months, there's a non-zero chance that Trevor Hildenberger gives you what Kinsler was going to, or Ryan Pressly has his upswing that should be coming for a guy that throws 97 with a good curveball and a decent slider. So I don't think the Twins got appreciably worse. And so the idea that, oh man, they gutted this team is foolish. The team that was 2 games over .500 a week ago is still relatively intact. Again, Kinsler did a great job in the 9th inning, but he wasn't a prototypical closer. He was going to be a free agent and was also prone to sometimes having innings that, you know, could get away from him, go sideways on him because of how much contact he allows. Now you might get a higher ceiling arm throwing those innings. Or maybe you get Matt Belisle throwing the ninth inning, mixing and matching. You know, so remember when Perkins got hurt last year? Do you remember who they mixed and matched in the ninth inning at first?
That's a great question.
It was Fernando Abad.
That's right.
On the left side. And then on the right side, I know it eventually became Kinsler, but I don't remember. It was Fernando Abad and...
He didn't use May, right? I know he leaned on May a lot.
No, it wasn't May. No, May had the back stuff last year, so he hardly pitched
at all. Yeah, that's right.
I'm going to pull it up because I know it was Fernando Abad on the left side, and for some reason I'm not remembering who it was on the right
side. Anyways, the point is they just need more relievers. Like, that's the thing is, I think I'm going to write about this eventually, just their pitching issues can be solved, but a lot of it is JT Chargois, Ryan Pressly, if it's Reed, Maltakis, whatever. You need a handful of those guys to come up, the fireballers. And I think, if anything, Molitor just needs to trust younger pitchers more a little bit, which is a little bit of a chicken and the egg.
It was Jepsen for a while last year, and he was terrible.
Jepsen, that's right. And then I think in terms of the starters, again, you just need numbers. I mean, they just need Gonsalves to be the real deal. And you may just need to go out and acquire someone. So I don't know. The pitching is more troubling to me. I think the shortstop's an issue, hitting behind Sano's an issue. But outside of that, it's really those kind of quote-unquote luxury questions of Rosario's bat's great, but do you always want to put up with his kind of overzealous play?
Yeah.
Can Max? I like Max Kepler. I think he's part of the solution, but how do you get him going? I don't know. I mean,
how soon can Fernando Romero come up? How soon can... What do you do with Dietrich Enns, who is the lefty that came over?
Even the catching long term. I mean, just like, you know, is this, what's the guy's name who they acquired in the Garcia trade? You know,
Recker.
Is Recker like part of the...
No, he's not part of the future. He's 31 or 32 years old. Yeah. No, that was taken back some money.
Garver, I was thinking of something
that. So you got to figure out, does Jimenez want to be back next year? And I know people will grumble about that, but honestly, what do you want from your backup catcher? Again,
no, it's more the starter. Yeah, like,
I think Garver can do everything you want for a platoon partner / timeshare guy with Castro. Righty hitter, lefty with Castro. It makes sense to me to mash those two guys up. But honestly, I think there's room for those three guys on the same roster if Garver's playing first and left field as well. And honestly, that probably makes Robbie Grossman superfluous. But if Grossman's starting at DH, you could, in theory, have a bench of Jimenez, Garver, Adrianza, and Escobar.
Yeah.
You don't need that extra outfielder, or you could have Granit when they roll back less pitching. They have options.
The best case scenario in Granit may just be a fourth outfielder.
I'm telling you, he is a fourth outfielder.
Yeah.
Because you look at his swing, and there's no elevation, there's no lift. He's going to be a Ben Revere what would you call it? A clone of Ben Revere.
Yeah,
basically.
Yeah, yeah. Kind of rehashed.
Rehashed. I was going to say, how do you say the word redux?
Redux, I think.
I don't know. He's going to be the second coming of Ben Revere.
So
his ground ball rate is off the charts. He's going to be useful. He's going to make enough contact to be useful, but he will never hit for enough power to be a starter, in my opinion.
Yeah, so that, because I think eventually you got to answer the Rosario question. Like, I just worry about him in the playoffs, just being a liability. Like, there's just things that you shouldn't do as a baseball
player.
But
also, though, keep in mind, he doesn't shy away from the big moment either. Look at how he played at the World Baseball Classic.
That's very fair. Yeah.
You know, if you worry about players that are worried, that can't handle the pressure, the guys that don't come to mind as far as handling pressure are Miguel Sano.
Right.
Eddie Rosario. That would be the first two guys that come to mind for me on this team.
I think Buxton will get there, too. I think the bigger point...
I think he's going to join the team today, by the way.
Yeah, I think the bigger point is he can't be, you know, going for third when he should stay at second. He can't be overthrowing the cutoff man. You know, it's stuff like that.
But all that stuff is correctable. That to me is not enough of a reason to say, yeah, sell high on this guy. You know what I mean? I think it's all the things that he's done poorly as his offense has ascended. If you look at his // line, it's pretty impressive. And James Rallison had some really great comments for me. I'm going to put those up on podcast form. I promised to do it last week and I forgot. The work that they're doing, the things that he's not doing well right now, his defense has taken a step back in terms of metrics and all that, that I do have questions about. All that, I think, is way more easily correctable than walk rate, than hitting the ball well. Like, he's done those things. He's done the things he didn't do well in his career better.
Sure.
And he's slipped on the other things. I think he can do all of them at once eventually. So how do you get him there? as a 25-year-old, 26 in September, I don't think I would move on from him, but we'll see. I just don't know.
Yeah.
Because you do have to go out and get another outfielder if you do that. And it is nice to have three guys who can all handle center. If you have Granit in there, that's four guys on your roster who can handle center field. I mean, that's a luxury and
sure,
a half.
Sure.
I don't know. We'll see. I don't know. So the Kintzler deal, we didn't really, I guess we did talk about it and we didn't. It made a lot of sense to me. The Garcia deal, which we haven't talked about either much. I think we...
I mentioned that they got...
had they traded... Well, we had Mike on last week. No, they hadn't traded him yet.
No.
The trade happened in the last week. Yeah. That makes sense to me, too. Enns... I saw someone say Enns is a really nifty pickup for a team like the Twins when, considering the Yankees are kind of in a 40-man crunch because of all the prospects they have.
Which is ridiculous.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
Yeah. So they'll give... they'll give Enns a look. Who knows? Maybe even some point this year. And then... Zach Little, who I looked up on YouTube, sounds a lot like Jim Tomei when he talks, has a little Southern boy in him, maybe a little John Lackey.
He's a 21-year-old prospect.
Yeah.
Keith Law was hyping him, like just kind of the potential. For,
I like Keith Law. I know a lot of people don't, but I think he's super, super good at this. And he's interesting. I mean, this not Keith, but rather Zach. 90 to 92... good secondary stuff.
He's like an old-school Twins pitcher.
But he's polished. I think you can see a path where Gonsalves and Berríos and Romero can front at least the middle of a rotation. You start backfilling with guys like Little and all that. You are eventually still going to have to probably find your number one. You could do the Kansas City thing where you just have a bunch of twos and put together a good bullpen. And I think... you can see the path to a good bullpen here. If John Curtis comes up and throws well, if Ellen Buznitz can keep the ball in the ballpark, Hildenberger looks awesome.
Buznitz has it like velo. Yeah,
he throws gas. Curtis does too. If Melitakis can come up and at least neutralize lefties, if Luke Bard can do that, I do think most of the upcoming bullpen is in-house. I'll be interested to see what Glenn Perkins has left. You know, they said he was around 90 that time he threw in the GCL. He's now at, I think he's with the Miracle now. So I don't think there has to be a ton of bullpen additions made here that people need to really wring their hands over. I think the talent is in-house that next year's bullpen could be pretty darn good without too much of a significant addition. So I don't know. I think that, you know, I think they're making progress, and I think that the moves all make sense to me, and I know I get accused of being too positive, and I don't care. I just mute those people anyway because I don't have time for that negativity. I use the mute button a lot on Twitter, by the way. So if I don't answer your tweets, it's because I have you muted.
I think you have to understand, football is made for an American audience. Every game matters a ton.
Yeah.
Like, you can restructure contracts where people get upset about all that. Like,
like the CBA prohibits the Twins from restructuring Jomar's contract.
And everything is basically a win-now mode, generally speaking, in football, right? There's just very little windows when those players are good. Baseball is different. It's just like you do have to – most of the games – in isolation don't matter that much, and you have to keep an eye on the future. It's what the Twins are doing now. They didn't really fire sale. They didn't really go all in. I think they're just trying to hold steady, see what they got, and see where the supplement really.
Well, I think they're going to keep throwing things at the wall as far as interesting youngsters. Let's look at this AAA pitching staff here before we depart. I know I keep banging the drum for Nick Turley, and that's actually been a point of contention for some of the people I have muted because apparently they think I'm related to him, which is stupid because... Yeah.
I'll do an investigation, people.
Yeah, that's fine. A 27-year-old lefty throws 95 miles per hour. And, I'm totally being biased that I think he has a chance to stick.
I think one, to add context to Nick Turley, he's a 50th round pick who signed with the Yankees because they threw a whole bunch of money at him.
Yep.
He's Mormon, could have gone to BYU.
I didn't know he was Mormon. That's interesting.
Yeah, I talked to him a little bit. Grew up in the same neighborhood as a friend of mine, which is kind of weird.
Nice.
I think under normal circumstances, he would have gone to college, and then he would have been redrafted, and we would have had a better... Where he was drafted would have better indicate where he's going to end up.
Mm-hmm.
Having said that, guys like Craig Kimbrell, for example, was a 33rd round pick or something. You know, there's guys that come out of nowhere that end up performing well. I don't think Rodgers, for example, was very highly picked. We talked about Kinsler,
Kinsler's twice a 40 round pick.
Right. But Maybe for starters, it's a little different, but I agree. When he first came up, I was kind of like, huh, like he really looks overmatched, especially in, I forget the game where he just got shelled, but,
which one was this?
His final start with the Twins. I'm trying to remember who just, was it the Tigers or something?
I'm sorry. I looked down for a second.
Nick Turley.
Oh, Turley, the last start. It was San Francisco.
I could look it up.
I don't remember either.
But either way, he got shelled in his last start. He looked really overmatched.
Yeah, just shell-shocked, basically, is what Molitor said.
Yeah, maybe deserves a second shot. He's done. It sounds like he's had one bad start in the minors, right? Otherwise, it's been really good.
Yeah. I think he had one rough start. Otherwise, 10.6 strikeouts per nine, 2.98 ERA. He's been moved to the bullpen, too, by the way, with Kyle Gibson going down. So
yeah.
I do think they're going to bring him up to be the long guy eventually. Here's some interesting arms down there. Do you think they bring back Michael Tonkin? 1.93 ERA, lots of strikeouts, kept the whip down. Only one home run allowed. With the issues Tonkin has had with home runs, who knows? Let's see here. Gibson has really good numbers down there. He's 29. He should not have any issues anyway. But Malatakis, 1.50 ERA. We'll see how his velocity is. Rusinski, 2.05 ERA, 8.2 strikeouts per nine, one walk per nine. Tim Melville, former top prospect, 27 years old. Also interesting, starting down there, 8.1 strikeouts per nine, a 2.44 ERA. Let's just see who else here that I'm missing.
Dylan
G has good numbers. Jake Reed has good numbers. Not a lot of strikeouts, though. But they've got some guys who are interesting down there. I really do legitimately think they will continue the churn and just see what they have in these guys and spend the rest of the year evaluating. They'll see what they have to play for. Because if they don't make the postseason, which the odds are stacked against them, it wasn't meant to be.
Yeah, and not expected at all.
No, not at all. And that's what's funny is that now people have this expectation.
Well, it's like with the Yankees, though. Just a real quick shout-out to ESPN. I thought they did a really good job at the trade deadline. Carl Ravitch, Tim Kurchin.
Teixeira.
But Mark Teixeira, who I thought was phenomenal on TV.
I love when the former players are good.
He was so, so good. A lot of interesting insight, just talking about prospect. You can tell he comes from kind of the Yankees bloodline because he's like poo-pooing prospects where in the smaller markets that's kind of your lifeblood. But who else was there? Buster Only. They just rotated through a lot. It was a conversation rather than just a shouting match and ridiculousness. Keith Law there for the prospects.
Yep.
It was funny when Teixeira said he didn't like the prospects. You know, Keith Law put up the stop sign and was like, I'm not talking to you anymore, because obviously that's his bread and butter.
That's his niche.
But anyways, I'm trying to remember how this relates to the Twins, other than kind of talking about the prospects and the value of them. Oh, the Yankees. So you were saying the Yankees went into the season being like, we're still on the tail end of that rebuilding. And it's funny that now, because the Yankees, everyone got the Aaron Judge bug and kind of the idea that this team can contend, and Boston's doing well, which always peeves
mm-hmm.
New York fans.
Yep.
It's funny that all of a sudden Yankee fans demanding that this team go all in and try to win the World Series. So I think it's common among all fan bases. The Twins can't sit around forever. They really do need to mm-hmm. step on the gas eventually here, but I think they have to be smart. I think Falvey has the right mentality that you can never have enough pitching prospects because arms blow out, or you just have weird things like Ryan Pressly, who should be really good. Kyle Gibson should be really good. Nick Turley should be better.
But I mean, the Mets. Look at the Mets. Matt Harvey, Jacob
DeGrom. Yeah,
you know they get to the they get to the World Series and lose, but they've got all these studs and like none of them are healthy. Noah Syndergaard.
Well, and we shouldn't forget some of the highest bullpen prospects are hurt right now. Right, Nick Birdie was initially in that Jaime Garcia trade, and it seems like Atlanta must not have liked his physical, which is kind of weird. They knew he was hurt, but. Mm-hmm. JT Chargois has been hurt, right? So, I mean, like,
yep.
Some of these guys just need to get healthy.
Jay, Birdie, Chargois.
Yes, Tyler Jay, another top pick.
Yep.
So, if those guys can stay healthy, if you kind of can have mass numbers so that you're not just giving away spots in the major league roster, they're earned and fought for. I'm going to write about this at some point. I'm sure you'll touch on it as well. But the pitching in general, because this is a huge, huge issue. I think it cost Terry Ryan his job.
Yep.
And, how easily can it be fixed? And they got to do it like right now because Sano and Buxton are up. Berrios is doing his thing. Kepler's looking good. Like, they can't just wait around for the future anymore, I think.
No, I totally agree. So, I think it's going to be, I still think it's going to be interesting. You and I are going to be out at the park. I'll be there Thursday, Friday. You'll be there Saturday, Sunday.
Yep.
Got Texas coming to town. It would have been interesting if things would have changed with maybe the Dodger series after the break, and they would have faced San Diego, Oakland, and Texas out of the break.
Sure.
With LA coming after the deadline. Would have been interesting. And instead, that's the way the cracker crumbles or the cookie crumbles. The Twins sell off a little bit, but you know, still kept basically the core of the team intact. I'm interested to see how it ends. I still have them down for 80 wins. They would have to win, let's see, they have to go 30. I think they'd have to win 30 of their last, how many games? They're 50 and 53, so they'd have to go 30 and 29? I can't math right now. So they'd have to play over 500 ball the rest of the way to get to where I projected them to. We'll see what happens, right?
Yeah.
Well, thanks for joining us. You've been listening to Midwest Swing, part of the Cold Omaha Podcast Network. For Tom Schreier, the producer today, Chris Cotillo of MLB Daily Dish, this is Brandon Ward signing off and saying thanks for joining us, and we'll see you again soon.